Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. Edwin is back, and Edwin is back to normal. Hello, Edwin. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Martin. I got the all clear on Thursday from my specialist. And as I was saying earlier on, last time I got this condition, and I was out for almost 6 months without a voice. But I ended up with this voice. This isn't my real voice. But I ended up with this voice. And I was hoping and praying that this time around I was going to get a baritone or some sort of more harmonic type of voice. But back to square one, Martin. I don't know what happened there.
We'll send it back and have another go. No, it's lovely to see you. And boy, there's so much to talk about this week. And it was only a few days ago from our last show, and everybody welcomed you back with open arms. That was great. But there's a lot to talk about. And a lot of it actually centers on what the heck is the government doing? And I mean, you know, let's face it, we know the bottom line, of course, is that the government is facing billions of dollars of funding cliffs ahead. We know they've got a huge hole in their budget, and the upcoming talk fest over the next week or so, just every week away, is looking as though it's not going to do much. I mean, people have come up with various ideas, maybe we should expand the GST to fund tax cuts, or maybe we should index income tax. Top banker calls for it, David Morgan. Or what about company tax hurting wages and productivity? So look at that. Somebody also said, well, the future's not made with handouts, you know. Maybe there's an alternative way of thinking about it. But then Albert comes out and says, no new taxes before the election. But look at this, Edwin. This was a really interesting piece of data here that shows just what share of the concessions, the tax breaks, go to the highest income holders, right? Both in terms of super contributions, super earnings and rated CGT, and the CGT discounts. So whilst Albo is knocking out tax changes ideas, and whilst Claire O'Neill is ruling out any changes, as Tarrant Brooker says, the on gone off again debate about negative gearing has been settled for now, etc. Negative gearing off the table. But boy, it is an absolute mess, and nobody wants to talk about the real issues.
Now, well, see, this is the thing, mate. Like we've been saying for a very long time, it's smoke and mirrors. With the right hand you giveth, and with the left hand you taketh away. So there's nothing new under the sun. And this is the sacred cow, and it's taboo to touch anything to do with investment properties, anything to do with CGT, anything to do with the taxes that many investors benefit. Because look, I think you've got to stimulate the purchasing of off-the-plan apartments in order to come anywhere near the yearly numbers that are proposed to be built. Because without the pre-purchasing, without the hordes of investors, whether they be local or predominantly from overseas, and as I said, the new lambs to the slaughter are going to be the silent tigers and any other entity that comes that comes abroad, because they think that this is going to be the next gravy train. You've got to keep that stimulated in order to feed the junkie that is caught up on the stamp duty. Don't forget, whenever you buy property off the plan, I mean, this is how it works in New South Wales anyway. Whenever you buy property off the plan, regardless of the fact that it's going to take 3 years before you take possession of the property, you're paying the stamp duty on or before 3 months of exchanging of the contract. So that is why I say that gravy train has to continue to run, and whether it be the labs or the libs, they don't want to cut that gravy train. They don't want to cut that that drug that's been feeding them intravenously for a very, very long time. But you and I said before the election, choose your poison. Is it going to be tenants or landlords? So, and we've got By sleight of hand, we ended up with tenants, and now people are crying unfair. But that was always, the announceables that they say that they're going to do, but they don't do, they don't perform. It's playing out right before our eyes. But again, it's a we told you so.
Well, the talk fest in just over a week won't really make much difference. Of course, the thing that they should be talking about, which probably won't want to talk about, is the NDIS. There was this headline that made the point that there are a lot of people being paid significant amounts of money by the NDIS directly or indirectly. And in fact, in NDIS recipients are almost being put up for auction and different firms rushing to provide services under the NDIS banner. And, mega profits to the highest bidder is what this is saying. But the NDIS is a huge, huge component of the budget problem that the government has. It's not the only problem, but nobody really wants to get to the heart of that. And when you look at how much the government is spending on things like AUKUS and some of those other initiatives that you scratch your head thinking, what? Why are you doing that? You've got to say there is a real problem. Income tax rates are still rising, of course, for individuals. And I personally think that the income tax rate should be geared to inflation rate, but of course they've turned that off at the moment. And then if you look at the people who are benefiting, as I've shown that earlier chart, it's not equally spread. So there are lots of people who are more affluent who are actually benefiting massively from some of the tax breaks, but that won't be something they want to touch either. So the question is, what will this talk fest represent? Well, what it will represent is a lot of hot air and a lot of cover for the government to do nothing or do something, but without any great direction. And meanwhile, ordinary people are continuing to struggle. I see this in my surveys all the time. And in fact, on Tuesday on my live show, I'm going to talk about it in more detail because I'm getting quite frustrated with the gap between what the politician thinks important and what ordinary people are thinking is really important. And it's got to the point where ordinary people in Australia who are trying to get ahead, try and buy a property, trying to find somewhere to live, are finding it more and more difficult just to get by. And the politicians are fingers in the ear and just going, la, 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 not our problem.
And that's a sad state of affairs. But I mean, look at the different distractions that are before us at the moment, with the recognition of overseas states as being recognised. That's creating a kerfuffle. The marches that are going to have taken place are going to take place. Are going to continue to. I mean, this is all distractions. These are all distractions from the average mum and dad. That are wanting to, wanting to put together a sustainable lifestyle for for the future generations, for the current kids and the grandchildren, which and the housing and the cost of living that we're all facing, the energy crisis. I mean, and we're going to get a lot more of it as we get closer to the end of the year. You and I better say what we need to say between now and December, because by December, in your part of the world, you're already gagged. In this part of the world, we're going to be gagged from December. And if it's going to be anything like what's happening in your part of the world and what's happening in Canada, who's to say that you and I aren't going to be doing these Monday evening property rants from our 6x4 cells. We laugh, but who's to say that they don't pull something that we've said 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago? Oh my God, I just remembered the memes that I came up with for Albo and Chalmers. I could get locked up. I mean, for calling the industry under quotas and other adjectives. I mean, it's just going to be. But they're all distracted from the reality. Reality is that it's harder to get by. Reality is the shrinkflation is just ever so in front of us, that we just it's just right in your face. But we go back to, as I said earlier on, the gravy trains. They've got to continue to run. They continue to bring in the income. Is the property arena, is the sale off the plan sales, is that stamp duty fixed that from the local governments to the federal government, they need, and they need the students as well, because it again it fuels that void that keeps the machine going. And look, the unfortunate thing, Martin, is as much as people want to compare our markets to Canada, to New Zealand, we're in a different we're on a different playing field. Our circumstances are a lot different from Canada. Where there's, I mean, in Canada there was, for 15 years they were absolutely going gangbusters with speculating off the plan. I mean, there's millions and millions of vacant apartments in Canada that are actually being held by the banks themselves. The banks themselves don't want them to go into a mortgage in possession, because it's going to be a huge catastrophe. But we don't have this here. Yes, we've got 1.2 million, allegedly 1.2 million vacant properties around Australia. But that's a small drop in the ocean when you compare it to the Canadian market. But when you start also comparing to the drop in prices of New Zealand, I mean, again, it's chalk and cheese in my view, from my perspective, because that as I said, our cousins are swimming over to our shores because of the economically we're a lot better, and you could and. A lot of the manual labor, which they do bring, that they do come over, and they are actively engaged in manual labor, is paying a good, they're getting a good return out of that from what they would be getting in New Zealand. So, I think the market's still going to continue to go northward bound because of all the government policies. That we've just been speaking about, because of the lack of construction, lack of supply, the sheer the volume of demand that's been generated by government policies, and the lack of, as much as you've got a lot of a lot of talk about approvals, approvals mean nothing. Approvals mean nothing until you put shovel to the ground, until you start turning the soil. In between the approval and completion, it's a long drink. It's a long time in between drinks, as they say. So that's where we are, Martin. So therefore, you've got to keep this thing. You've got to keep the exchanging of properties. You've got to keep that machine lubricated by internal exchange and creating that internal demand. And bringing in more from abroad, whether it be through rentals, through renters that create that then again obviously spurs the investment side of things, and then you've also, don't forget, we've also got to rescue the Victorian market as well.
Yes, and just to underscore a couple of things there, as I discussed the other day, you know, the 25,000 additional students which are coming will put more demand, and we've seen that coming through. So the student numbers are going up, not down. And yet, on the other side of the fence, as this Cotality article shows, the approvals are lagging. Approvals are not the problem. Delivery is. There's around 219,000 homes under construction, but the real bottleneck lies in the build phase, not the planning reform. While state and local governments focus on approvals and improving the feasibility of new projects, building companies continue to be stretched thin across an already swollen pipeline and reduced margin. And we know, of course, more building firms are going to the wall. So there is very little way that we can square the supply demand disequilibrium we've got. Nobody wants to turn back migration, which is, I believe, something we should be doing. And the other point, of course, is the types of property that are actually being spent on and focus on are these high-rise dog boxes that many people don't really want to live in anyway, very poor quality of construction as well, as we've been discussing previously. But you've got another point. Just how much money is being spent on the focus group and the regulations and all of this sort of stuff that really doesn't make a huge amount of difference? You know, it really is quite remarkable where the money's going.
Yeah, and this is where we talk about the where we talk about the committees, where we talk about the focus groups, where we talk about the new regulations on the fly, industry training guidelines, you name it. It all costs millions and millions of dollars, and yet to get us nowhere, to get us nowhere, because they don't really want to deal with the problem that's endemic within the industry. Unless you really cut it out, and unless you really bring in the put some serious teeth on the regulators, you're really not going to get anywhere. And this is what we have, to the point where, as you and I, we've been talking about it, and I predicted it, and that was, Sydney's gonna basically become the underquoting capital of Australia. And as I point out to Lucy McKernan and the Sydney Morning Herald, that I wrote that article, that story there in my ex-post, that's just scratching the surface. Now let's talk about what's already 10 paces further ahead, and that is your NCBs, your non-committed buyers, your dummy bidders. Let's get serious about that. And the fact that you and I have been sharing, and we broke the news, and we broke the stories, and we got the receipts with regards to the NCBs not not propping up prices, as well as being on the actual books of the of many agencies, from north, south, east, and west.
Yes, and this last week there was quite a lot of coverage in the newspapers about underquoting, and this article started off, Sydney revealed as the underquoting capital. No surprise, we've been highlighting that for a long, long time. Real estate agents are gaming the system, costing buyers time, money and angst, and making Sydney the underquoting capital of Australia, according to the article here. Here's another bit of it. False hope and underquoting capital. They're providing misinformation facing buyers. Whilst the law states a price guide must be a reasonable estimate of the likely selling price, many agents are using an unofficial industry standard allowing a 10% buffer between the guide and the result, usually without warning buyers. And they've shown here some analysis where suburbs have been most misguided by underquoted selling. And it's some of the usual suspects, as you might expect. And then this goes on, false hope, savings wasted and underquoting capital, thousands wasted in nations underquoting capital, how we reveal the truth about property auction guides. And it started as a simple trick, track online property price listings and compare them with sales results and figure out the gap. The idea was to try and get some handle on the underquoting problem, but it does illuminate the frequent frustration that home buyers face when trying to match real estate website prices against the auction action or an auction. And of course, that's now quite interesting. This was quite interesting from Marco. Did you see this? Underquoting is frustrating, but the outrage is misplaced, he said. It's actually to do with the supply-demand disequilibrium. I disagree with that. I think it's a fundamental issue that's wired into the way that the real estate industry works. It's a fundamental expectation of the way that markets work, partly, of course, because the wealth story is now all about property. And as this article shows, the wealth creation continues to ignore the elephant in the room. But the fact of the matter is, it's property, property, property all the way. And that means that we have a real estate industry that can't help itself, just trying to get more and more momentum. But in the context, Edwin, of slower volumes. And again, we are one of the, small areas where we're actually calling out the reality in terms of what's going on in the market too.
Yeah, and this is the thing is, Martin, that Jonathan Chancellor, he used to own Property Observer about 10 years ago, thereabouts. I did an article with Jonathan Chancellor, and we spoke about back then. We spoke about the market dynamics in terms of the hot market and the difference in price between a guide and an upward swing of up to anywhere from 5 to 10%. You could say, yeah, it's market dynamics. It's the heat level of the temperature level of the market at the time. Emotion. You could call it all that. But when you start talking about 15, 20% differences in price, I mean, that's just sheer shenanigans. But the sad thing, the sad part of this, Martin, and I'll be talking a lot more in weeks to come, and that is the fact that, look, we're moving into an era that the people selling real estate, the selling agents, fundamentally, people are going to have to start realizing that they are your worst enemy. They are not your friends. And look, yes, we've got websites. We subscribe to websites. Our website subscription is about $1,200 or $1,300 a month for different websites that we subscribe to in order to get background information on different properties. More importantly is the knowledge and the relationship that we have with many offices around Sydney, and we can basically get the duck's guts from the selling agents themselves as to what the real expectations are. But outside of even the subscription websites that we have and the inside information that we gather with Dusty and Evan and the rest of the team and myself, to help our and assist our clients that are looking at buying property, you can get to a point, you can get closer to the reality of what the price the property is going to sell for, and it really baffles me as to how many are fooled by the underwriting strategies. And it comes back to, I was thinking about it over the weekend, and I was just having a chat with Dusty, and we're talking about it, and we're saying, well, it's the sheer hope. It comes back to hope, Martin. Hope that has somewhat misguided them to put all the hope and trust in the selling agent. But it's that hope of finally getting into the market, finally getting in, and but then being disillusioned at the end because as I said, the selling agents from a buyer's point of view are your worst enemy. From everything they give you to what they tell you to and not tell you. And this is where we try to push out more and more through this forum, through the channel and our Monday rants and being educating people for many years as to what to look for, what to do and how to better equip yourself. But you're only going to have to become more and more equipped. And at the end of the day, look, you're going to need people like myself and my team to in order to get out there and fight for it on your behalf at a cost. But the cost is, Martin, a fraction of the potential loss on the other side. You're talking about the high-rise dog boxes. Today, I was talking to one of our clients. He said, "Oh, Edwin, can you? I need you to come and help another young fellow that." That's looking at settling on an apartment complex over at Castle Hill, and then I said, let me guess, there's a lot of defects, and they haven't even settled yet. And he said, yeah, that's right. And I said, look, first word of advice is tell him to tell his lawyer to not to settle until they do a final, a final or handover inspection. A proper handover inspection. Happy to get my team there and assist them with that. We had $50,000 to $60,000 worth of rectification work. But the thing is, people get pressured into settling because they think they can. And unfortunately, Martin, the legal industry, in their eyes, isn't paid enough in order to properly perform a conveyance. And conveyances don't charge enough or don't know enough about the properties. And they don't, in a way, they don't advise their clients properly to get do a proper professional handover inspection in order to protect their clients. And then after that, Martin, you've only got 30 days in order to get a lot of this stuff rectified, or it's pretty much, and also it's pretty much getting in line because in a block of 146 apartments, you're going to be one of the 146 people waiting to have your stone bench stop that's been scratched in the process, get it repolished, changed, or whatever you're going to push for. And it's the old saying is, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the oil, and you got to do a lot of screaming, you got to do a lot of squeaking because you're not going to get served. You're not going to get served. And a lot of people give up mid-flight, and we're talking defects before you even walk into an apartment. One bedroom apartments in that complex are selling for $760,000. Two bedroom apartments are selling for $950,000 plus. With, as I said, with defects of anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000. And now that's just on the surface. Then you start thinking, shit, if there's all these defects on the surface, what didn't they what didn't they comply with the stuff that you don't see, predominantly the waterproofing, and the list goes on and on and on. So this is what you got, and this is the pressure that buyers have been put into. As I said, they don't have the time to do the due diligence in when it's a auction sale or any other type of sale when they get pressured to buy, or they don't know what to do when they're buying off the plan. And unfortunately, a lot of them are young first home buyers that are getting absolutely hammered.
Absolutely. I'm seeing it all the time in my one-on-one conversations with people who are completely confused, bamboozled. And as this article says, rubbery figures leading buyers down the garden path is just the beginning of it. It was interesting. Did you see this? There was an article here about one particular agent dummy bidding, underquoting high-pressure sales tactics, and producing false documents for fair trading are among the allegations alleged to being leveled against one of Australia's highest earning real estate agents. Well, nothing perhaps new there. We know that it goes on quite a lot. We know that many people are actually being bamboozled by agents left, right, and centre. It's worth highlighting that the agents have their own agenda, which of course is lining their own pockets, never mind the benefits of the clients that they're actually dealing with. And, it just goes on and on and on. And the regulators, well, they're almost nowhere to be seen. Fair trading in New South Wales, absolutely overloaded. And as you said in a post here, it's about the countless 100,000s or more, I would say, rather than thousands, saying, catch me if you can. Because occasionally, one or two pops up, but it's absolutely rife within the industry. That means you can't trust them. Now, there are some good agents out there. Let me just say, there are some good agents, but they're really hard to find. And unfortunately, some of the successful ones are those adopting the high-pressure tactics, all of the stuff that we talk about, underquoting, et cetera. So, the agents are actually not your friend. That's something you need to understand. You've got to actually treat them with arm's length accountability and responsibility. Get everything in writing and do your own checks and balances and make sure that they're looking after your interest, not somebody else's interest, because they're only interested in lining their own pockets. It's always been like that. But because of the pressure on the market at the moment, and because volumes are somewhat down, as we'll see a little later, it's putting extra pressure on agents' behavior. And just let me segue, because I had three conversations this week, Edwin, with people in my one-on-ones, this is, with people who are actually property investors. So they've actually got these properties. Those properties have been managed by different managing agents. But in each case, the agents came to them and said, we suggest that you put your rents up by between 8% and 15%, right? Now, in each case, the property investor said, no, we don't want to do that. We don't think it's fair to actually put the rents up. And then I had a mic drop moment because I suddenly realized, of course, well, hang on a moment. How are the managing agents remunerated? And the truth is, they are remunerated on a share of the rental received, directly or indirectly, right? So it's actually in the interests of the agents to put the rents up, irrespective of whether the property investor actually wants to have the rents lifted or not. So in one case, the agent said, well, if you don't put the rent up, we're not going to manage your property anymore. It's astonishing. And it's even worse, isn't it, Edwin? Because when you look at the value of the rental book, it's based on a multiple of those flows.
So it's the biggest income for a rent roll, or the biggest value of a rent roll, is the ongoing, the saleability of that rent roll. So on average, for every dollar that you get by way of commission, there's a weekly commission that's charged or monthly commission that's charged on on the management of an investment property. On average, across Sydney, that this is across Sydney, on average, we're at 5.5% to manage property, which is relatively low when you in compare. If it's managed properly, it's very, very low. Yeah, there are some that even do it up to 3%, which is crazy, but and in the Western suburbs. But so you get a 5.5% commission from the revenue gained over the for the month for the monthly rental income. But that dollar value is can then be multiplied on average for a rent roll or a book, as we call it. You can multiply it by 4.5. So for every dollar that you get by way of commission annualized, you multiply that by 4.5, and that is the value of that management. So a property management, in theory, can be worth from 5 to 5.5 to $7,000 for to have that on your books. Now, this is the thing. Banks recognize that value, and they will loan you against the book. They will lend you, some second-tier banks will lend you up to 70% the value of your book. So if that so you just have to do the math. You can borrow up to 70%. I think St. George, last time I was dealing with them, they only lent up to 60%. But so it is classified as an asset, and it's an asset that you could get a loan against, which is why. So that is why there is a push to increase rents, and that is why there is a push to increase the value of their book. But there's the conniving and the shenanigans, Martin, and this is where people have got to be really, really careful. Now, if you issue a notice, a 60-day notice for a rental increase notice, so yeah, the tenant says, yeah, bugger it, I'm moving on. Well, guess what? When that property gets relet to a new tenant, agencies claim anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks letting fee, or 1 week plus advertising costs plus preparation of the documents, which is more income, right? So in a way, when the rental market is tight, then guess what? You've got multiple streams of income coming in. So the property management teams don't lose. And this is the rot. That is the rot. That is not not probably talked about. It is the industry inside that, and this is why a lot of people, it's better, look. Yeah, you could say better the tenant you know than the one that you don't know, better the devil you know than the one that you don't know. And especially if they're good tenants and they pay on time and they keep the place tidy and why increase it by $10, $20 when at the end of the day you could be losing a downtime, a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks of downtime, plus all the other added costs after they find another tenant for you. So you're out of pocket 4 weeks to what? Claim an extra $10 a week. So this is the rule. Going back to the topic of discussion with regards to the industry, Martin, and the shenanigans that being at play. As I said in that post, in that X post, I said that the news shouldn't be as much as about the one that got caught, because we knew he was always going to get caught, or the individual was going to get caught. The news story should really be about the as you say, the hundreds of thousands, the thousands of others that haven't been caught, are flirting breaking the regulations, flirting with these unhinged practices, and they're basically giving the regulators the middle finger and saying, "Catch me if you can." And we know there's a lot of them. The industry knows them. All the industry, all the if I was heading that, if I was heading that group in Fair Trade in New South Wales, I mean, you just go and interview the agents. You just go and have coffee with the local agents, and they'll dob each other in. And but look, it doesn't take rocket science to really get to a truer value of a property when it's when you know it's being lowballed, in particular when you've got properties or the same property that was now being resold before it went through a transformation and a makeover. It was bought for on or about the same price within a 3 to 5% difference in price, guide from what it was bought for 2 or 3 years ago, and they're trying to tell you that the owners are going to cut their losses. I don't think so. Not in this market. So, but as a as I'm proud to say that our followers and our viewers are ahead of the pack. The unfortunate thing, Martin, is that why did we get here? Why are we here after 3 decades of trying to reel this in? Why are we here? And one of the main reasons why we're here is because these individuals are idolized, and these individuals are put on pedestals. And the other unfortunate thing is that as I've said for many years, that this price at low, watch it go mantra. Stems and comes from the halls of the so-called industry bodies themselves, and those that run the industry bodies, which is the sad state of affairs.
Yes, absolutely. It is officially sponsored by the various supervisory bodies, right? And as we've said on many occasions, the fair trading authorities don't have the person power to be able to go and do the checks and balances. But it doesn't seem to be in the interests of agents to actually do the right thing. And talking of that, there's another story that you highlighted also of another article here in Melbourne. This is about the accounting issues. And here there's a particular person who's called out for allegedly failing to meet auditing responsibilities regarding client funds, including home deposits and rent. And this is a tip of another iceberg, Edwin, which is that more and more what we're finding is that agents are outsourcing and using, offshoring for their data and accounting. So you've got to ask the question, where is the data going? Who's accountable? And who's checking to make sure that that information goes to the right places, not the wrong places, and is adequate and appropriate? And so this is another part of this whole question about the structure of the industry and the disclosures that the industry should be making.
Well, see, this is what you and I have been talking about for a number of years now, and I started highlighting it. You and I started highlighting it about 3 years ago, maybe even a little bit longer. That was where the industry was heading, and the different because mates that are still in the industry that are still licensees in charge of different offices across Sydney. And it's not your as much your independence as it is your main franchise groups that are actually offshoring a lot of the administrative duties. This is a scary thing, Martin. When you start offshoring data, valuable data and information overseas, and from a property management portfolio. You gather a lot of information, and very, very sensitive information, from bank account details to people's dates of birth and how much money they got in the bank and all this sort of stuff. Screenshots of the and a lot of that information isn't redacted, that people submit, and a lot of those submissions are done online. So it's a scary thought. Many say, "Oh, it's mainly the independents that are going to be in a lot of trouble." I say otherwise. I say that it's going to be the franchise groups that are going to be in a lot of trouble, especially if they're outsourcing a lot of this data. Because, and then my thing is, Martin, is what are we really paying these groups or these people, these property management teams, what are we really paying them for? What are they doing? They're outsourcing the periodic inspections. They're outsourcing the ingoing inspection reports. They're outsourcing the outgoing inspection reports. What are the property managers doing other than every now and again going to the rental property and taking taking photos of with their with the smartphones and then uploading them onto a website that's the back end is managed over in WA or the Philippines or India or Pakistan, wherever it may be. It is scary. And this is something that the regulators need to pay very, very close attention to. But also the actual officers themselves. I've been speaking to quite a number of officers of late, as they share with me the licenses in charge share with me which way they're going, and they're saying, oh yeah, we're saving money here, we're saving money there. But you're losing two things. You're losing that relationship with your client who is the landlord. You're losing that relationship, and you're also losing somewhat the relationship with the tenant, which is very important to have as a property manager in order to be able to manage the property a lot better, and to be able to walk through those troubled waters when there are disputes. Because guess what? The tenants only see the property manager once during the tenure, and they've got very little discussion with the owner, so it becomes very, very messy. So we've lost those touch points. Why? Because it's all about saving money, but it's going to bite the industry hard, and we're going to hear a lot more in the future about it, because we're going to get a lot of cybersecurity issues. And the regulations around cybersecurity are very fierce now. Some of my legals, lawyers that I know in the industry have just had to do their CPDs with regard to cybersecurity and how they've had to insure themselves against cybersecurity, because not having the right systems and the right protocols in place in order to protect the value, the data that they have. It's a serious crime. It's a $400,000. It's a minimum $400,000 fine if they're found to be in breach of that. And this is something that's going to come hard on the real estate industry. But for now, the industry is laughing and carrying on and thinking they're doing the right thing. But they're not using those so-called saved resources. They're not using them to better the relationships with the client. They're using it to upgrade the models on their on the Audis and on the Mercs and on the BMWs. It's sort of reminiscent of what the government's doing with all our taxes. Spending more money on flights overseas and having credit cards of up to $635,000. For extra expenses, taking the little focus groups away to have powwow meetings to decide whether or not the green frog or the brown frog or the lizard's going to be saved, whatever. I don't know what they do, but they seem to be spending a hell of a lot of money.
I'm afraid that's very true. Now, let's just briefly touch on the RBA. Of course, the RBA is expected to cut tomorrow when they actually make their interest rate decision. And everyone's still, I think, expressing surprise about the July story. And they're expecting a move of 25 basis points to 3.6%. But Juno Bank economist Warren Hogan says a 35 basis point cut is needed at the coming meeting. The reality is, although the latest inflation figures are okay, the economy in this grinding recovery, he said, the one issue is making sure inflation stays between 2 and 3%. And AMP is talking about 100 basis points of cuts over the next few months. It's interesting that other economists are saying that, well, the RBA is expected to cut, but they're also expected to kill rapid fire rate cuts. And that's partly because of the uncertainty with regard to the US and Trump and everything that's going on there. And also the fact that they're relying on data that's not particularly helpful when it's making decisions. And they want to see some of the real evidence coming through But you know, it's really quite hard to know how this is all going to play out. But I have to say, Edwin, I just want to share this little picture with you. Did you see this? I thought this was really funny, right? So thinking about what's happened to the economy, you know, Trump and the tariffs, and you can see there that he's looking one way, but the little mem says, fire, ready, aim. Aim this way, right, at the U.S. consumer. And I suspect that some of the broader fallout from the Trump tariff story is still to play through, and that is going to be something which is going to perhaps cramp the RBA's ability to be able to push rates down that much. But it is interesting how everybody is still spruiking the property market left, right, and centre. And I don't know whether you had a chance to look at some of these, but you know, I had a quick look at some of the recent articles. Article here about auction numbers steady while prices are strong. We require two or more cuts to bring the momentum back, says one expert. Obviously, the clearance rates were still relatively low, as we'll come on to relatively low because, of course, the numbers sold compared to reported isn't the same as number listed, as we've highlighted many, many times. And once again, of course, this information is partial. And, you know, wherever you look, you get partial information. The other point I want to make, Edwin, is that the ability for ordinary people to get hold of information about property price trends, it's getting harder and harder because more and more of the information is being privatized, put behind paywalls, and made really inaccessible to ordinary people. That is, unless they want to pay a lot of money.
That's the thing. And when you're just wanting to transact on one property, I mean, you're not going to pay all those subscriptions in order to fees in order to get there, right? And this is what we're looking at ways to facilitate that and to help our clients and offer different services, you know, different to your service that you provide, you know, to give them a granular look at certain properties and for, you know, in, you know, whereas we're looking at the transaction side of things. But more important, Martin, is also the actual physical inspection of the property to see whether or not the price has cut the mustard. I might have mentioned last week, I'm not sure whether I mentioned last week, I was still on high on drugs, medicinal drugs, that is, so my brain was a bit foggy, I'm not sure, but I might have mentioned it, but there was, you know, and it wasn't tequila. An individual bought a property. We're going to go and see him sometime this week. It's a referral from one of our clients again. That bought a property over in Baulkham Hills, and he bought a property, close to a year or just a bit over a year ago. And guess what, Martin? Bought a property with two freshly renovated bathrooms. And you know, the type of bath renovations done with the showroom renovations, which fortunately now the plumber that is called to work out why there's stains and water running down the staircase and so forth, and the stains in the ceiling, and the plumber's just giving him the bad news that the waterproofing's failed altogether, and so it's going to be interesting to see why. But this is where I say it's the physical inspection and understanding what you're looking for. It's not just the physical, but also understanding what to look for and how to determine whether or not these so-called newly renovated areas have been done to a proper standard. And that is a key part of it, because you're not only paying, you're paying that emotional, you're paying extra for the emotional joy of having something that's already renovated. You're also paying for the peace of mind that you don't have to have it renovated. So you're paying premium. So where a renovation could cost anywhere from $40,000 to $45,000, but you're actually paying premium. You're actually paying $100,000. Because it looks nice and shiny. Now it's going to cost you a lot more on the other end, and this is where the key. So it's and understand and seeing and being able to quiz the selling agents. This is why I say, as you said earlier on, Martin, There are many good agents, but guess what? They're all not your friend. They're all your enemy. You got to take them. They may be good, but they may be good at what they do for their client. You are not their client. Just you got to get that through your head. We know in the majority, the first and foremost comes the wallet, and then comes the vendor. But you don't even come in 10th place on the pecking order. So once you got that, in your head, you come to the understanding that you've got to scrutinize, you've got to pull things apart, you've got to move shit around, because even the building inspectors won't do it. And most of the building inspectors that work in those reports that you get from before you buy, before you bid, again, the best you could do with that is to start a bonfire.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you a little story here, Edwin, which is quite relevant, because I was doing a one-on-one with a client a little while ago, and he sent me some photographs of a property that he was thinking of buying. He'd gone around with the agent and was quite excited, because it's quite an established property. It was built about 15 years ago. But one of the things that I noticed from the photographs was that the water from the outside of the property, was being collected in the, at the gutter level, and was coming down the, the side of the
The
wall, down the
fascia.
pipes. But then I was looking to see, well, where are those pipes going? So I actually suggested that he might want to get a bit of an expert advice on where those pipes were going. The reason I suggested it was because the property itself was relatively flat, and I couldn't see much in the way of drains. And I was thinking, well, if you have a heavy rainstorm, what happens to the rain that comes off the roof, goes into the gutter, goes down the downpipe, and then where does it go? And so he actually got someone to look at it, and discovered, to his horror, that there were sort of some very unofficial soakaways that had initially been put in place, but there was no proper handling of the water in a rainstorm. And now, he sort of said, well, I still like the property, blah, blah, blah. So he decided to buy it. Anyway, I got a message the other day from him to say, you were right, I was wrong. We just had a massive rainstorm in Sydney, and I've now got a pool in the back. It's about 2 inches thick, and the water's got nowhere to go because there's no plumbing for the rainwater. And I thought, well, how many thousands is that going to cost now to fix? And if you'd only actually followed through on that thought earlier on, you could have saved yourself a lot of money.
It's strange that you said that the property was only about 16 years old, because that would have been a condition of that development would have been to have the detention tank, and it all going to the detention tank, especially if there's no fall. So it's strange. So the first things that come to mind is if they took shortcuts on that, what other shortcuts did they take with
That's
that property? I'd want to have a look at the what type of bed it's got, what type of footing, whether they've got footings or whether it's on the slab. I mean, it's just going to be one of those things that you don't want to open up, because you open up a can of worms.
Yeah, I suspect there's probably a slab underneath, and I suspect that the problem is that they didn't want to invest the extra money in proper rainwater handling, because that would have been too expensive. The land was actually it's quite solid underneath, with the with the sandstone, and I suspect that would have required some further excavation. So I'm not sure they actually did it. Anyway, it just shows you again, as you were saying, on the way into your transaction, do your due diligence then. Don't do it, in a half-hearted way and say, oh, she'll be right, because actually, quite often, she won't be right.
That's right. That's right. And that's the unfortunate thing. And this is where the as we get into the numbers, this is where you find out that a lot of the properties that are being held up, and there have been some articles they are talking about the why it's taking up to 180 days for some properties to sell. It's because that they're absolute lemons. But with the demand, and with the pressure, and now with the interest rates are supposedly going down, or wish people wishing to go down or taking that punt, guess what? You could be, what you might save in the interest rate drop, it's going to cost you a hell of a lot more when you go out and buy something that's an absolute lemon. And it's just going to cost you tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, straight off the bat.
Absolutely. Yes, lemons don't always appear to be that tasty. And I'd have to say that it could be a very, very bitter experience. Let's look at the numbers then. So in Sydney, in the Sydney region, based on Domain, on the 4th of August, 19,694 properties available and listed. And you can see there the breakdown with apartments leading the way. Maybe no surprise. In the 11th of August, a rise to 20,118, and the story is still pretty much the same with more apartments than houses. But I'm also interested to see, again, looking at the numbers, quite a lot of properties have now listed some time ago and are still hanging around, a bit like a bad smell, you can't get rid of them. And if you look at the numbers here, you can see that the listings numbers are tracking higher relative to last year and the year before, which tells you something quite important. But as Edwin said, it's really important to understand how long properties have been on the market. And that's not always easy to get. Like I said, the data is actually quite flawed quite often. And sometimes what you find is that the property is listed for a few weeks, taken off, and then comes back on again, and then goes off again and comes back on again. So it might actually have been on the property market for a lot longer than the listing might actually suggest.
Yeah, this is something that there's rumors in the industry. I'm not sure. I haven't got my finger on that pulse yet, but it's that's what the agents are pushing for the portals not to not to disclose that. And how they're going to do it, I don't know. I know some of the licensees that I speak with, they're a bit vocal about it, and they get the shits about it, because everything is. Has been recorded, and you can, with people like ourselves, because we use the same databases that they do, the same information sources that they have, we have as well. But they're rig that. That's the right word. They're trying to rig that side of things. Whether they do, whether they don't, it's is yet to be seen. But yeah, I'm 100% with you on that, Martin. It's just becoming harder and harder to for the average pundit to go out there and get the relevant information.
Absolutely. I did an anti-spruik for the South Coast of New South Wales the other day, which was again highlighting that there's been quite a lot of properties on for a long period of time, which is quite interesting. Look at the Melbourne numbers briefly. On the 4th of August, 24,635 properties listed. And interesting that in the Melbourne area, houses are featured there at the count as the largest proportion. And a week later, 24,566, so a bit different from Sydney. In Brisbane, on the 4th, 3,271. A week later, 2,346. So not a lot of movement. And auctions, well, the auctions are quite interesting. But again, I am getting more and more sense that people don't want to go to auction, don't want to trust auctions, and don't like the auction experience, and are beginning to smell a rat. And here's the trends data, which shows, well, guess what? It's down.
Yeah, this is where it becomes more and more interesting when you actually got the vendors not jumping in, and or it's harder for the agents to convince vendors, and it's it, well it'll be quite interesting moving forward from last weekend's stories with regards to the number one auctioning agent in Australia, blah blah blah, as to how that's going to reflect with the with numbers moving forward. But again, we've got the second half of the year. For me, there's just no confidence from in the market with regards to the strategy. I'm not that interested in the numbers as much as I am with the strategy that vendors are opting. But also, agents, because we're in a point in time where properties have reached the you know that that height, it's going to take a lot to get to, if they're going to jump a lot higher. Obviously, there's going to be the government's going to have to create a greater demand through immigration, through as I said, we've still got the golden visas yet to play out. We've got more wealth coming in from the Silent Tigers, from India and other parts of the world. So it's it's a wait and see. But until then, when you get when you're trying to sell to the local market, I think the more sensible strategies is your private treaty strategy and really making the selling agent work for their money. Otherwise, what are they really doing?
Yeah, very good point. Here is the trend data for the median value tracker, and you can see there that Melbourne apartments are drifting down. The others are drifting up, well, some a little bit more than others. But again, low numbers. And I've got a little bit of a worry with these averaging reports that come out, which mask quite a lot of what is going on. as we always say, go granular, look at the detail. And also, just look at the rentals. So, on looking at the Sydney rentals on the 4th of August, 11,156. A week later, 11,027. And in Melbourne, 11,586 compared with 11,575. So, just a little bit of movement, not a lot. But again, I want to come back to this point about the fact that a lot of renters are being confronted with more price rises for the reasons that we discussed earlier, and that isn't really being captured in some of the official data. The official data, of course, in terms of rental growth, only is reporting the advertised rents, but it doesn't capture those cycle rent rises that are part of existing tenancies. And for me, that's a big missing piece of the data. And the ABS data is so slow, it doesn't really help us. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, we've got just time for your thought of the week. And well, this is a biggie and a really, really important story, isn't it?
Yeah, look, for many years you've seen fence palings and the main posts in front of footpaths. And I took a photo of this on Friday and put it up on my ex account on my ex handle. And but I thought it'd be good to raise it again in Monday's tips because this is a dangerous game that people can play and people can you can get caught out. The reason why. You've got to ask yourself the question, why do fence posts and palings, why do they last so long out in the weather? It's because, because they've been treated with chemicals. It's not that far, it's not that too long ago where, a lot of the timbers were also treated with arsenic, in order to, to protect it from the, from bugs and everything else. I mean, there are some floorboards. That were used to be painted with a lot of with DDT and all sorts of stuff. So this, but the fence posts and the palings, something that I don't encourage anybody to put over an open fire in the in even in the backyard or when you're having a an open fire in your backyard or if you can where you can, or some use them to start up the barbecues, the wood or the most dangerous thing you could do is, in my opinion, is when you've got a fireplace at home and you use them to as firewood, which is what the sign says there, free firewood. Yeah, the only thing that you get that's for free potentially is your funeral. You're certainly not going to be paying for it because it can be co very, very caustic. So that's something that you people have got to be very, very careful of.
Yeah, it's a really good warning. And of course, quite often the wood will be treated with chemicals or indeed have paints, which can be toxic as well. And it is very, very important that people watch this and take care. And particularly when, budgets are tight, people are always looking to cut corners. And if you're free sea, free fire, then, oh, whoopee. But no, be very, very careful. And, you can't take risks with this stuff. Edwin, Very important conversation tonight. Thank you very much for that. And for all the warnings and all of the shenanigans we've been talking about, you know, the good news is that there are people around who can help you and guide you, but you've got to ask the right questions and, you know, be very, very careful and very cautious, because there are people out there who aren't your friends.
Oh, 100%. And there's, you know, and that's how you got to take it. That's how you got to take it, especially. And again, as I say, and we you know, and I reiterate, and we, it's not just about, it's not just about gaining a principal place of residence or an investment property, but it's also about you know, getting a rental, where we try to get as much as we can, share as much as we can to, you know, put our audience, you know, on the front foot and ahead of the pack. So yeah, it's a pleasure, and hopefully we can continue to bring these insights and more insights, and talk about the different things that are trending or changing, you know, taking place. You know, with the weather the way it's been, it's been hard to catch up with Dusty and Evan, but there's a lot happening with the economy over in mainland China that's going to obviously have an effect on us, and we can talk perhaps a little bit more next week with regards to that, and I'll get around as well to start catching up with some of the Silent Tiger influencers that feed us the information, and see which way we're headed.
Yeah, well, I look forward to that, Edwin, and glad to see your voice has got to the end perfectly, so that's great, and I'll look forward to doing it all again next week. Have a great week, and we'll see you then.
Likewise, man. You take care.
Cheers.